They came up on what was left of the posse a day later. The remnants of the posse were riding south, toward home. They were a pathetic-looking and defeated bunch. Not a man among the seven living had escaped unscathed. All wore bloody bandages.
They laid an ambush for us. The outlaws took several of my men prisoner and tortured them, while the others kept us pinned down in the hills. Oh, it was the most awful thing I have ever seen or heard. They're worse than a bunch of damn Injuns.
You heard back at that little town just south of us that the state militia is out in force, looking for Lake and his bunch.
Well, they're getting organized now. 100 strong. They'll bring those savages to justice, by God.
Sure they will. All nice and legal-like, right?
Sam and Bodine turned their horses' heads toward the north and rode off without another word. They came up on the bodies of the tortured men the next morning. The posse members had died very hard, in various ways. Sam shook his head and grimaced as he and Bodine dismounted, getting shovels from their pack horses.
Very inventive bunch of people. Brother, do you remember reading about something like this taking place in Utah about 5 years ago?
Yeah. Come to think of it, I do. The paper said something about it also happening in Kansas, too.
I was beginning to feel guilty about us pursuing Lake, wondering if this was our fault. Now I realize he's done this before.
There's a word for what he is.
Criminally insane.
How about just no good?
That's two words.
I can think of another. Scum.
In the southern edge of the San Joaquin Valley, Lake and his gang cut a violent and deadly path as they turned, not west, as Bodine had suspected, but northeast, toward the Sierra Nevada Mountains.
Now what?
There were probably lots of small mines in there. Lake could split his gang into 5 or 6 groups and really terrorize those people.
I don't know, brother. Lake would set up an ambush for 20 posse members, but allows us to keep on coming after him. It just doesn't make any sense. And where's the state militia?
They found the answer to that a few miles up the trail, at a small town as yet untouched by the rampaging band of outlaws. They headed straight for the marshal's office.
They're spread out northwest of here. They took a chance and guessed the gang would keep on heading northwest towards San Francisco. They guessed wrong, I reckon.
What's this Sierra Nevada's like?
Wild, mountains to desert. Sagebrush country. Wagon trains are still coming this way, too. Although each year there's less and less of them. This outlaw might have him in mind for easy picking. I never thought he'd come this way again.
What do you mean?
This is the third time in 20 years he's done something like this. He come rip-roaring through here back about 57, I reckon it was. I was running a placer operation at the time. He was just a kid, no more than 19 or 20 years old. They'd run him clean out of Texas under threat of hanging. But he put together a gang of no accounts and went on a rampage. After that, he went overseas and joined up with the French army, so I heard. He fought in Mexico and other places. Then he come back here about 10 years later, and damned if he didn't do the same thing again. Now here it is 10 years later, and he's back.
Why is he doing it?
For one thing, he's nuts. He likes to kill, likes to hurt people. He was born a good people, but born bad. You know he killed his folks, burned the house down around them, and took off.
No, we didn't. How old was he when he did that?
14.
They pulled out at dawn, two young men riding into the loneliness of the Sierra Nevadas, riding after a murderous madman and his band of cutthroats who outnumbered them 30-1. But who were still running from the two of them. Neither of them could figure it. It was cold in the high up as the men huddled around the small warmth of a fire they had built under an overhang. They had eaten bacon and bread, and then each enjoyed the last of the coffee. Bodine tossed out the dregs and rinsed out the pot.
It's us he wants. You know that, don't you?
Oh yeah, I know. It's turned personal for him now. But he's got to stop somewhere. Sometime. They've been pushing it mighty hard. He's too good a soldier not to know that once his men get tired, they also get careless. They've got to hunt a hole and rest. We just have to figure out where that is and hit him.
Just the two of us?
We still got some dynamite. And as far as just the two of us goes, I don't see any reinforcements riding up to lend a hand.
I don't understand this part of the country. Back in Wyoming or Montana, there would have been 500 men hunting Lake, and they'd never stop until they were hanging from a tree.
It's civilized out here, brother. Not nearly so much as it is way back east, but much more so than what we're used to back home.
In the fading light of the fire, Sam studied a crude map of the Sierra Nevadas.
I figure we're here. Now all we have to do is guess where Lake might be holed up.
Bodine leaned over and traced the river's southward flow.
He's along this river somewhere. Bet on it. They've got a rest.
Oh, wonderful. That really narrows it down. We only have about 75 miles of river to search.
No. He'll be heading for the wildest and most desolate part. Remember what that old marshal said about the caves right along here? That'd be perfect for him. And you can bet he knows about them. Add it up, brother. The last few towns he's hit, he's taken horses and supplies. Maybe he's planning on holing up for the winter. And if we can catch them in those caves, we can seal their fate forever. It's just a guess. But what else do we have to go on?
Now, brother, you wouldn't do something like that, would you? Sealing people alive in caves? How terrible. It's like that man in the posse told us. There might be boys along, just seeking thrills.
Bodine rolled up in his blankets.
We buried that man, remember?
It began snowing the morning they pulled out. It was an overdue snow, coming late in the season, but now it was coming down with a vengeance. They made it to the Kern River before the snow halted them. They made camp and waited out the storm. As soon as the sun came out, the snow began to melt and they could travel. They agreed to split up, Bodine going north for 15 miles, Sam traveling downriver the same distance. If Lake and Porter were here, they would be within that range. For 2 days, the men and their horses struggled through the snow, inspecting the few caves they could find along the way. No sign of the outlaw gang. The sign they did pick up made no sense to either of them. Back at the meeting point, they sat with blankets wrapped around them in front of a fire, a large fire, for they knew that the outlaws were nowhere in this vicinity.
So what do you make of it, Sam?
Sam drank his coffee in silence, then studied his brother's face for a moment.
They crossed the Kern and went east, all of them.
Well, damn, brother, I know that, but why? What's he trying to pull?
I don't know. But according to the tracks, they're a full day ahead of us by now if they maintain direction. But why? Why abruptly change directions?
We'll know that when we catch up with them.
They pulled out the next morning, just as the sky was turning steel gray in the east. They crossed the icy waters of the Kern and left the Sierra Nevadas several days later, crossing just south of a dry lake bed and continued south, not wanting to cross through the center of Death Valley. With Brown Mountain in sight, they cut due east, riding through the northern tip of the Avawatz Mountains. They found a grizzled old prospector and swapped him food for information about water holes. His directions proved out, and they rode hard for Las Vegas, Nevada. Las Vegas was a sleepy little desert town with water. It had been settled by the Mormons back in 55 and was abandoned by them some 2 years later. Bodine and Two Wolves headed straight for the livery to have their tired horses tended to.
Rub them down and give them as much corn and oats as they could eat. They've earned it.
Some young hard cases in town, over to the saloon, guns all shiny and tied down low. They're all making big talk about how they made fools out of Matt Bodine and Sam Two Wolves. I expect they wouldn't talk like that if they figured Bodine and the breed was anywhere as near.
Bodine smiled thinly, as did Sam. The stableman took a closer look at the pair.
Holy jumping Jehoshaphat, it's you!
Which saloon?
The man pointed.
That one right there. There's five or six of them in there.
They ride in alone?
Sure did. Been here 2 days now, making a nuisance out of themselves. They ain't caused no real trouble, but everybody would be just as happy to see them go. I tell you what, though, they all got their pockets stuffed full of money.
Anything else in their pockets?
I don't know which... Yeah, I do know what you mean. Yeah, watches and rings and stuff they've tried to sell to folks.
They say where they got those articles?
Yeah, said they got lucky at poker.
Not a word to anybody that we're in town.
You got it.
Bodine and Sam checked their guns and walked first to the cafe, keeping out of sight as much as possible. Over beef and beans and potatoes, Bodine put into words what had been nagging at him for several days.
They're heading for Utah, brother.
Sam paused in the lifting of fork to mouth.
I don't follow you.
Laurie?
Sam laid his fork across the plate.
For pure spite?
That's it. That's the only thing that makes any sense to me. Porter has said that he wants her. Lake, as nutty as he is, might be blaming her and Jenny for all his misfortunes.
This bunch in town now?
Put here to stop us, maybe. Although that's reaching for an answer. I just don't know. Maybe they just got tired of it all and quit.
The counterman had been leaning on the counter, listening.
Your name Bodine?
That's right.
Them hard cases is here to stop you from going on. They've been in here several times, bragging about how they was going to make a reputation right here in this one horse town by killing you.
Sam drained his coffee cup.
I guess that settles it.
Bodine stood up and hitched at his gun belt. Sam did the same. They tossed money on the table and moved toward the door. Before leaving the stable, Sam had tucked the spare Colt behind his gun belt, and both men had loaded up the cylinders full. They walked up the street to the saloon the outlaws had chosen. Bodine opened the door and they stepped inside the stuffy and beery, sweat-smelling warmth of the barroom. A pot-bellied stove was cherry red in the center of the room. The saloon was empty, except for 7 gunslicks and 1 barkeep. Neither one of them wanted anything to drink.
Not a hole, mister.
The barkeep vanished into the stockroom, located in the back of the building.
How come you boys didn't ride on to Utah with Porter and Lake?
By the looks on their faces, Sam and Bodine knew they had guessed right as to where the outlaw gang was heading.
Huh?
That'd be about your speed. Making war on women and little girls.
The gunslicks looked at one another. This was not the way they had planned to take out Bodine and Sam. This was no good. It was too close here in the saloon. If they opened the dance in here, they were all going to get lead in them, for Bodine and Two Wolves were going to be hard to put down. The outlaws had planned an ambush, maybe a back shooter on a building. This just wasn't working out at all.
I don't know what you're talking about. I don't know no one name of Porter or Lake.
If you don't shoot any better than you lie, you're in a hell of a mess, Coyote Face.
The man flushed, but made no attempt to grab iron. A young man stood up. He was a fancy Dan and cocksure of himself. He was dressed to the nines, with a belt made of silver dollars and wearing twin pearl-handled pistols tied down low. He had tried to grow a mustache, but had succeeded only in growing something that looked like a deformed dead mouse under his nose. His black-gloved hands were hovering over the butts of his guns. Bodine looked at the young dandy.
You want something, boy?
My name's Sundown. And I think I can take you, Bodine.
Bodine wondered where in the hell these would-be gunhawks came up with their nicknames.
That's good, boy. Everybody ought to have a name so it can be cut into their headstone.
What do you want on your marker, Bodine? Engine lover?
You'll never live to see my final resting place, boy. Now why don't you sit down and shut up and maybe you'll live through what's coming here?
I think he's afraid of me, boys. Hell, he's yelling!
Another gunslick stood up.
I do believe you're right, Sundown. I think maybe Bodine's reputation is bigger than he is.
Well, one thing about it, brother.
What's that?
A few less for us to deal with in Utah. Ah!
The fancy Dan was doubled over from a .44 slug out of Bodine's Colt, and the other man took a slug in the center of his chest from Sam's Colt. Neither one of them had managed to clear leather. Both Bodine and Sam hit the floor before the echo of their shots faded and crawled behind whatever cover they could find. Sam rolled to his right and came up near the edge of the bar, as Bodine went to his left and did the same. The attack came so suddenly, it was seconds before the remaining outlaws could react, and those seconds cost them their lives, as Bodine and Sam filled the beery air with lead. Bodine reached behind the bar and came up with an express gun, jacking both hammers and lining the twin barrels up with 2 gunnies still on their feet. Bodine and Sam slipped behind the dubious protection of the bar and quickly reloaded, just in case any might still be alive with some fight left in them. They stood up, hands filled with Colts. The barkeep stuck his head out of the storeroom, looking around wide-eyed.
Oh, it crashed!
one of Lake's gun slicks had crashed through the big window on the street side, hanging half in and half out of the saloon. Another was dead on his boots against the back wall, his shirt collar caught on a hat rack, both hands hanging by his side. The two gunnies who had first braced Sam and Bodine were on the floor, dead or dying. The two that took the brunt of the loads and the sawed-off were spread all over the center of the room.
That's six. Where's the other one?
They ran to the door and watched the seventh gunny hightail it out of town, riding low, presenting less of a target.
Damn!
It was then Bodine noticed the left side of Sam's face was covered with blood.
It's a scratch. What about your shoulder?
Bodine hadn't even noticed. He took off his sheepskin-lined jacket and looked at the bullet hole. Another fraction of an inch lower, and he'd have been plugged in the shoulder. The brothers grinned at each other and turned to the bar.
Now give us something to drink.
The bartender placed a bottle of rye and two shot glasses on the bar.
What about them dead folks?
Bodine poured both glasses full.
What about them?
Who's going to plan them?
Damned if I know.
A deputy pushed open the door and walked in, shaking his head at the sight.
It's about damn time you showed up, Lars. Where the hell you been for the past 2 days?
Down south of here, chasing rustlers, that's where.
The deputy walked to the bar, picked up the bottle, and gestured for a glass. He poured a shot glass full and then looked at Bodine.
You boys know these hombres, or do you shoot up every saloon you come to?
They're part of a gang that's been robbing and raping and killing through half of California. We've tracked them from Los Angeles.
You boys got names?
Matt Bodine and Sam Two Wolves.
The deputy lifted the glass to his lips. He paused, his eyes widening at the names. He then took a first sip, then down the rest of it.
We got to find somebody to dig six graves, Lars.
Eight. I caught up with them rustlers. Brought them back across their saddles. You boys are sure welcome to stay the night and refresh yourselves and rest your horses. I'd appreciate it if you was both gone come in the morning.
We were planning on leaving at first light, deputy.
Good. Las Vegas is a fine town, filled with church-going folks. I wouldn't want it to get a bad name.
Deputy, you have any idea where Cedar City, Utah is?
No, I reckon it's a good 150 miles from here.
Damn, we'll never make it.
What's the problem?
Sam laid it out for him. The deputy thought for a moment.
I'm changing my mind about you boys. You're not bad hombres like some people think. This is a right honorable thing you're doing. Tell you what.
The deputy gestured to the barkeep.
Give me a sheet of paper, Gene.
He drew a rough map, looking up while he drew.
You boys up to pulling out tonight?
Bodine and Sam exchanged glances.
Yeah.
The deputy looked at the barkeep.
Tell the stableman to saddle four of his best horses. Transfer these men's gear. Move! Boys, stay north of the Muddy Mountains. It's 50 miles to the Tumbling Bar Ranch. I'll give you a note explaining what you're doing. The foreman will switch your saddles and give you some food, and you can be on your way. Just south of the Pine Valley Mountains in Utah, there's a ranch run by my brother. Name is Clint. I'm writing him a note, too. It's about 40, 50 miles from here on into Cedar City. Go, boys, and good hunting.
They swung into the saddles and were gone at an easy, mile-eating lope. They had no way of knowing how far ahead of them Lake and Porter and what was left of the gang might be, or whether Lori and Jenny were dead, but they had to try to reach them. Matt Bodine and Sam Two Wolves rode on through the cold night, pausing only to change mounts, and then it was back in the saddle and keep going.
Hello!
Hello, the host!
Hello, we're friendly!
Don't shoot!
They hit the front yard of the Tumbling Bar Ranch, and within seconds they were surrounded by armed cowboys in various stages of dress, but all with guns in their hands. After the foreman read the note from the deputy, the fire was stoked up and coffee heated and food prepared while the fresh horses were saddled up. Tully Brown, the owner of the Tumbling Bar, read the note.
You boys can't fight no 30 men alone. Besides, you don't even know where Wellman's ranch is. Dick was a friend of mine from a long time back.
He turned to his crew.
I want 5 men armed and saddled up in 10 minutes.
His whole crew stepped forward. Tully smiled and picked out 5.
Get cracking, boys. 2 horses apiece. We'll switch up at Clint's place and probably pick up some more men.
Now there were 8 riding through the night. There was no way that Tully Brown was going to stay out of this fight. The men who rode with Bodine and Sam that night were not gunfighters in the sense that they were known as such or had books and songs written and sung about them. But many a man in the West was a fine gun handler. He just didn't push his skill, or his kills were never recorded to be told around campfires and bar rooms. What these men were hard men in a hard land in a hard time. None of them knew Lori or Jenny. They knew only that a young woman and a little girl were in trouble, and they were going to help. The trial would be by gun smoke and guts. If any of the outlaws survived, they would swing from the nearest tree. Tully Brown hit the yard of Clint's ranch. Inside the main house and bunkhouse, lamps were lit and armed men filled the yard. Tully was brief in his explanation. Bodine and Sam could feel eyes on them momentarily. Then men were running for the corral to rope, top off, and saddle horses, while the women hurriedly made fresh coffee and packed up pokes of food for the last leg of the journey. Now there were 15 men riding hard for Dick Wellman's ranch. The men bundled up against the freezing night, with mufflers tied around their faces and their hat straps tied under their chins, each leading a spare horse, each with an extra Colt or Remington shoved down behind his belt, each with a pocket filled with spare cartridges, each with his saddle-booted Winchester filled up with 44s or 44-40s. Dawn split the eastern sky with hues of silver and gold and red, and it was a welcome sight as it highlighted the pockets of snow that lingered here and there on the harsh landscape of southwestern Utah. The men rode on through the cold, grim-faced and ready for a fight.
We'll need fresh horses in case we have to charge or chase. Right over the next ridge, there's the Lazy L. We'll change there.
Now there were 20 men riding through the morning, with Tully Brown taking the lead.
How many did you say there was in that gang of scum?
At least 30, maybe more. I guess more.
We got enough rope. I can't abide a man who'd molest a good woman or hurt a child.
Bodine led the way, Sam right behind him. Tully was the next to follow, then Clint, then the others. As he topped the ridge overlooking Dick's spread, Bodine put the reins between his teeth and filled both hands with Colts. The gunfighters, the ranchers, and the hands rode into the circling bunch of filth and trash and scum, catching them completely by surprise. Bodine spotted a known gun for hire named Randy Walker and ended his mercenary days by putting a 44 slug through his head. Sam knocked another out of the saddle and rode his horse right over the man, the steel-shod hooves driving the life from him, staining the snow crimson. Tully Brown rammed his horse into the horse of an outlaw, knocking the man to the ground. Tully leveled his Colt and shot the man between the eyes. Bodine saw Porter trying to make the house. He reined up, leveled his Colt, and dusted the man, the slug entering one side and coming out the other. Porter screamed as he hit the ground, then twisted in the snow and came up firing, the slug stinging Bodine's cheek. Bodine shot the man in the chest and turned his attention elsewhere. Four of the hands had, at Tully's orders, stationed themselves along the ridges overlooking the ranch house. Using rifles, they prevented any outlaw escape. The fight was brutal and short. Halfway through it, a group of Utah ranchers and their hands rode into the fray, having heard the news from other cowboys from the Lazy L who rode through the countryside, alerting the populace to the danger. A few of the outlaws surrendered. They were promptly taken over the ridges so the women couldn't see what was happening and hanged. All but one of Dick's hands were down, two of them dead, sprawled in the yard. The cook had barricaded Lori, Jenny, and himself in the house and fought like a wild man protecting the woman and the girl. Tully waved at the grizzled cook.
You old goat. I thought you was dead 20 years ago.
Well, I ain't, Tully, so hush up and light and sit. I got fresh coffee and bear sign.
A tin cup of steaming coffee in one hand and a donut in the other, Bodine prowled the carnage sprawled around the house. Lake was not among the dead.
Brother, up there on the north ridge.
Bodine looked. Even at that distance, he could tell it was Lake, sitting his horse, looking down into the little valley. Tully gestured to his men.
Some of you boys take him.
No, he wants me. This is a personal matter.
Bodine walked out into the road after getting another cup of coffee and another bear sign. he stood in the road and waited, sipping and munching. Lake had not moved. He still sat his horse and waited and watched from the ridges.
What the hell's he waiting on?
Bodine stood in the road.
He's trying to spook Bodine, but he's wasting his time, I'm thinking.
The sheriff and a posse had ridden out from Cedar City. The sheriff had looked at the half-dozen men hanging from trees. He nodded and rode on into the ranch yard. Lori explained what had happened. The sheriff eyed the tall young man standing in the rutted wagon road.
Who's that out yonder?
Matt Bodine. That fellow up yonder on the ridge is the Outlaw Lake.
Showdown time, Sheriff. Going to try and stop him?
Do I look like a fool? You got any more of them bear signs left, ma'am?
Coffee and donut in hand, he turned to Sam.
You'd be Sam Two Wolves?
That is correct.
Good job you boys done down on the border. I heard about it.
Thank you. It would not have been possible without the help of Comandante Luis de Carrillo and his men from the Mexican army.
I ain't got a thing against Mexicans. Here comes Lake. Gonna be right interesting round here shortly, boys. And girls.
Bodine had taken off his gloves and had his left hand shoved down into his jacket pocket, his right hand wrapped around the warmth of the tin cup. He watched as Lake slowly rode down from the ridge onto the wagon road and reined up about 100 feet away from him.
Good morning, Bodine. Do you think it's a good day to die?
For you?
Lake's face flushed. He dismounted and began walking toward Bodine. Bodine tossed the coffee cup to one side and brushed back his jacket, exposing both Colts. His left hand was close to the butt of the left-hand Colt, his right hand hovering near the butt of the other six-shooter. No one had yet figured out how he did it, but all knew that Matt Bodine was just as fast with the left-handed butt-forward pistol as he was with a tied-down Colt on his right side. And Matt could tell that was worrying Lake. The outlaw's eyes kept shifting from left to right as he continued walking toward Bodine. Matt did not attempt to talk the outlaw out of dragging iron. He knew that for Lake, surrender was out of the question. He would rather go down by a bullet than be hanged. But Matt Bodine had made up his mind that Lake would not go out so easy. Lake stopped about 50 feet from Bodine.
End of an era.
Yes, and yours has been a bloody one.
Oh, I wasn't talking about me.
I was.
Bodine drew and shot the outlaw in his left shoulder. The move caught Lake completely by surprise. The slug turned him around in the road and he stumbled, somehow managing to keep his balance. He jerked out a pistol with his one good arm. Bodine turned, presenting less of a target, and took careful aim. The shot broke the outlaw's right arm, leaving him helpless, unable to use either arm.
You bastard! You've left me to the hangman!
That's the general idea.
Bodine holstered his Colt and walked away. He walked over to the man with a star pinned to his heavy winter coat.
He's all yours, Sheriff. Me and Sam will be here all the rest of the winter helping Miss Lori to get this ranch back in shape and locating beeves for the spring roundup. If you need us to testify, we'll be here.
You should have killed him, Bodine.
I'm tired of it, Sheriff. I'm tired of me and Sam being judge and jury.
A condition that will soon pass, I'm sure.
We'll make it a very quick trial, Matt.
Matt and Sam Two Wolves spent the rest of the winter and part of the spring fixing up the ranch, hiring new hands, and locating cattle for roundup and branding. The cold winds changed to cool and then to warm as spring began laying gentle hands across the land. One pleasant spring morning, Lori looked out the kitchen window and was not surprised to see the horses of Matt and Sam saddled and tied to the hitch rail, the men leaning against the rail smoking. She stepped out onto the porch.
Have some coffee before you leave?
We drank a pot in the bunkhouse. We just wanted to say goodbye.
Jenny will be disappointed.
She knows we're leaving. I think it's better this way.
Will you be back?
Probably not. I like that young fellow who's sparking you. I keep hearing wedding bells in the future.
Jenny's crazy about him.
All the more reason for us to be pulling out.
Thank you both for everything you've done. I'll never forget you.
They swung into the saddle and each touched the brim of their hat in farewell. They pulled out of there as soon as they saw the tears begin to form in Lori's eyes. They reached the end of the ranch road and stopped. The wagon road ran east and west.
I seem to recall you mentioning something about Texas.
Only in jest, I assure you, brother.
Well, we have to go back to the fort to get our horses.
And the way is west.
It was the last time I looked.
Then look again, it's south of us.
Well, call it southwest. I'm easy to get along with.
Since when?
I'm telling you, Sam, I want to see Texas.
Oh, all right, Bodine, all right. Stop pouting.
I'm not pouting.
I said all right. Let's go to Texas.
Both young men let their ponies run for a time toward Texas.
Blood Bond, Brotherhood of the Gun is a graphic audio production. Copyright 2007, William W. Johnstone. Production copyright 2007, The Cutting Corporation. Performed by Thomas Penny, Dylan Lynch, James Lewis, David Coyne, James Konacek, Nanette Savard, Jeff Baker, Terrence Aselford, Richard Rowan, Michael Raplogle, Ken Jackson, Christopher Graybill, Michael Glenn, Erica Rose, Nathaniel Perry, Chris Rowan, and Mort Shelby. Directed by Nanette Savard. Book adapted for graphic audio by Wilson T. Ferrier. Dialogue editing by Brian Patton, Carlos Anderson, and Christian Parent. Graphic audio sound design by Brian Patton and Christian Parent. Additional original music by Brian Patton, Johann Detweiler, and Greg Reinfeld. Produced by Rick Rowan and Dwayne Beeman. Executive producers James Cutting, Mary Cutting, and Angie Cornett. If you enjoyed Blood Bond, be sure to look for William W. Johnstone's Eagles series, available at Road Stops Everywhere at 1-800-670-5220 or at www.graphicaudio.net. Read the Pinnacle Edition. Visit www.kensingtonbooks.com.
Available now from Graphic Audio. Doomsday Warrior. Red America. Roxanne made the trip to the interrogation area within 5 minutes of receiving the call from Wrath. He walked into the brightly lit room, antiseptically clean, where the captured Russian officer was now strapped into one of the red mindbreakers that had been taken from a convoy several months before. It was the newest addition to the Russian armory of torture devices, capable of producing exquisite pain in the brain of anyone strapped into the wretched machine. It had already been used successfully by the Reds to break through the hypnotic mind blocks of several captured free fighters from other cities, forcing them to reveal the locations of their hidden headquarters. And as soon as the Reds had found out, they had sent out bombers with neutron bombs and blown the populaces back into the dust from which they had been born. So there was a touch of ironic revenge, which all the Americans in the room felt while watching the Red officer strapped into the large globe. The officer, Ivan Smolenik, was dreaming. He was on a boat on the Odessa with Karenina, but the boat was crashing into rocks, and she was going under the waves. He dove down, down into the darkness. He couldn't rise, the light above him seemed to disappear, and he was being sucked into a whirlpool of pain, spinning, agonizing. His worst fears began emerging as the technician adjusted the knobs several feet away.
No! Ah!
Rats were gnawing at his hands, then his face. Razor teeth were ripping at his eyes, then moved down to his genitals. They tore away, ripping his manhood from his body, running across a nightmare red floor with a bloody organ, tearing at it, biting it into pieces. He tried to move, to punch, to kick, but his body was tightly bound in the chair.
What was in the convoy? Where were you bound? Answer, and the pain will cease.
Ah! Stop the pain, yes, I will talk! We were carrying mindbreakers to Pavlov City under direct orders from President Zhabnov himself.
How many?
How many? Ah! 2,000! Stop the pain, I beg you!
What for? What were the mindbreakers for?
For Plan Lincoln. For the Plan Lincoln that is being carried out in Pavlov City.
Plan Lincoln? What were the mindbreakers for? What's happening in this Pavlov City?
I don't know, I swear! It is some huge plan directed by the president himself, using thousands of mindbreakers. Workers are being brought in from around the country for some sort of brain modification, but I don't know what, I swear. Oh, please, God, if you are God, free me from this pain!
For what? Just tell us for what, and your pain will stop.
I don't know! Oh! I swear! Please bring back the Odessa, the boat, my Karenina in my arms! Oh, God! I don't know anymore!
They had fought their way up to the 36th floor, where they were meeting stiffer resistance. The leader of the force that had been pushed up from below ran over to Roxen, holding his Kalashnikov far out ahead of him, as he still had not quite gotten used to the handling of the weapon.
We've lost nearly two-thirds of our men downstairs, Roxen. The Reds are using some kind of rifle that shoots fire. They got the whole lower portion of the building now. Christ, they must have nearly 1,000 troops down there now. They're just blasting through us. I don't know if we're ever gonna get out of here. What the hell are we gonna do?
If they're using fire, let's return the favor. There are bottles of alcohol and other flammable liquids stored in closets along the floors. Get 20 men and bring everyone you can find back here.
Freed workers came running back from all around the building to report to Roxen, who had become the general in what was turning out to be the largest battle between American and Russian forces since the landing of Soviet commando forces a century before. The men sent out to get the flammable liquids came back dragging bottle after bottle of the stuff.
Where should we put it?
Pile it all up on the stairs. Good. Now we'll wait. Looks like we won't have to wait long.
Retreating wounded workers came pouring up the stairs.
Everybody up here! Watch the bottles! Don't knock them over!
Soon, the Reds sounded like they were on the floor below, and the first spray of fire could be seen rounding the stairs.
Everybody get back!
Time to send some Reds straight to hell.
The flame-throwing troops waited a second for the smoke to clear ahead of them, not noticing the pungent stream beneath their feet.
Attention all black shirts! They're one floor above you. Engage and fire at will.
They brought their flamethrowers to bear, hoping to fry more American flesh. Instead,
that should hold them for a bit.
If you can't find that hot graphic audio title you're looking for, just head to www.graphicaudio.net, where you can order it in CD or MP3 disc format. Or, the fastest and cheapest way, download that puppy and play it on any of the many devices that'll play Windows Media. And if you're on the road or just a total computer feeb, snatch up the phone and call 1-800-670-5220. That's 1-800-670-5220 or www.graphicaudio.net.